Welcome to Transformative Talk, Critical Conversations for Teachers. I'm Dr. Zid Haddad, a professor of instruction within the Department of Interdisciplinary Learning and Teaching at the University of Texas at San Antonio. I teach undergraduate and graduate courses in curriculum and instruction. In short, I teach teachers how to teach and save lives through the use of critical multicultural education as an approach to teaching and learning. Our podcast is produced by a different group of graduate students each week, giving them an opportunity to talk about what they're reading in my class, what they experience in the field, and how that impacts their own lives and understandings. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast from wherever you're listening. Also, you can ask us questions and engage with us further using the anchor.fm website or the anchor.fm app on your phone. You can submit questions and you can also send us voice messages. And remember, please share our podcast on all your socials so that we can build our audience. Thanks for listening, and here's today's episode.
Awesome. All right, this is Emily and Julian, your hosts for this episode of Transformative Talk. In this episode, we're going to talk about our thoughts and feelings on the readings this week, how the discussion in class was and how that went with everybody. And then also later on, we'll talk about privilege and how it has affected our own experiences. So this week, one of the major topics that we talked about was funds of knowledge. And during class, we asked our peers what funds of knowledge means to them and how they will use it, or if they already do in their classes. So I know, Jillian, you already are obviously a teacher and are teaching currently. So how have you kind of seen this like in your own classroom or in your experience teaching?
So to me, funds of knowledge really just goes all the way down to getting to know your students and their background, where they're from, their interests, their likes, their dislikes. So funds of knowledge for me in my classroom is knowing how my students work is my main thing. I have one little kid that I know will not respond to anything if anyone even slightly raises their voice, or even if it's not in like a malicious intent, he'll completely shut down. So aww. I know that student, you have to be very quiet, very gentle, because otherwise he flips a switch and he won't do anything.
Yeah.
But to me, that's what funds of knowledge is. And as well as we have discussions every morning and morning meeting about shares of good news or bad news in their life. And we use the good news or bad news to implement our lessons throughout the day. Or if they tell me about they loved going golfing with their dad, then maybe we'll talk about golfing or stuff like that. So that's how I use it in my classroom. And I know some of our classmates had really good ideas too. I can share some of those too.
Yeah, definitely.
Megan told us that funds of knowledge refers to the understandings of how our students are inside and outside of the classroom and how it affects their personal learning environment. So I really liked that one too. And then I really liked Jennifer's response to it. It was, I use my students' funds of knowledge across all content areas. For example, in science, we're learning about animal characteristics and their basic needs. My students use their schema or experiences with animals they have high levels of interest in. Then we implement a project-based learning unit in which students will research and create an animal habitat diorama using items from home. So I really like that she set like an entire example of exactly how she's doing it right now, this moment.
Yeah, that makes me think of, I feel like when I was younger, I had like every so often, like teachers that would like send out like a like questionnaire at the beginning of the class, like, what are all of like your favorite things? Or like, I don't know, like, where would you want to go in the world? Like that kind of thing. So I feel like that's like a good like baseline to like get like, you know, little tidbits of information to then like do what Jennifer was saying of like, oh, well, like we're talking about animals. So like, I don't know if a kid's favorite animal, or if like a lot of kids' favorite animals were like a tiger or like elephant or something like that, kind of like focusing in on that, I think would like kind of get conversation moving a bit more, especially depending on the age group of the kids.
Yeah. And it's so easy too, like a quick little Google form, even like it doesn't have to be anything hard just to get to know them a little bit.
Exactly. And like even in the video that we showed in class of the Nevada school, I know one of the teachers, like he just like had a question that he asked the students every day, like as they enter his classroom. And like one of them was just like, what's your favorite season of the year? And like the students would just like walk in and like tell him like, oh, summer, spring, like whatever. So I think that's really cool to like kind of like kickstart the day. Just because like I know like even like I'm not in the like teaching realm yet, but one of my first corporate jobs, like almost every day, especially Fridays, we would always start the day with a cold open. So it'd usually be like, sometimes we do like an activity like as a team, but a lot of times it was just like, hey, we thought of like this fun like question of the day. So like everybody goes around and like asks it or like tells a story about like whatever the question was. So it like helps kind of like build a like community within like their group. So that's kind of like how I've seen it, this like similar idea in like a corporate world setting, because a lot of times if somebody has like, yeah, like if somebody has like a similar thing, it's an easy like conversation starter between yourselves, because as adults like it's hard to like make friends and stuff like that, so it like makes connections really easy. So yeah, so like once we had these readings this week, I was like, oh, like I mean, I don't have like the actual experience of like necessarily doing it myself in a like school education situation, but in my actual like career life have had that, because my two jobs since then didn't really have that. It was just like all business. So it made it hard. It was just like, okay, well, like it's just work. Versus,
but it shouldn't just be limited to education. Exactly. It should go across all realms of like the world, because you have
because
the people you're working with.
Yeah, because we had a manager, so like in a sense, like the manager is the teacher in the education section,
right?
Or I guess field, if we want to be politically correct. So yeah, so like the manager is basically the teacher there and is trying to get as much information from each person as they can to like understand them more than just, oh, you're one of my salespeople on my team kind of a deal.
Right.
So I think that is definitely important in more fields than just education, for sure.
It makes or breaks like the whole job. If you're, it shows your boss is going to care about you if they're asking those things, or just even trying
exactly.
to get to know you, or like having a fun conversation to start the day off with.
Mm-hmm.
I know in PLCs, like when we meet with our counselor and our instructional mm-hmm. coach and admin team, they always start off with what's a good thing happening, what's happening, or what are you looking forward to? So just something mm-hmm. like a quick, it can be a 2-second answer, but they know a little bit more about us and we know a little bit more about them.
Yeah, exactly. No, it definitely goes a long way.
I agree.
And then I guess going back to the readings, because we talked about the mall one with Fens of Knowledge quite a lot, but and we talked about it a little bit in class and with Dr. Haddad, but how did you feel once we like learned why Yoso's reading had, I think it was 6 pages of citations? It was a lot.
That was crazy. See, to me, I'll read these readings and I scroll down. And I'm like, yeah. How much of this is citations that it's not really 25 pages.
Exactly.
It's really 10. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh yes. But then when we were meeting with Dr. Haddad, he was like, did you look at them? I was like, honestly, no. Like I just scrolled down and I saw there was a lot and I was like, good for her.
Yeah. But
then he was explaining that all of those people were strategically put in there because Yoso knew that she was doing something big. It like made my heart happy for those people, because now all of them are getting credit that they 110% deserve. And like now they're in more critical pieces, like the one she put out, and it meant probably a lot to them too, that she cited like every single little thing. And it was like, I don't know if liberating is the right word, but
no, yeah.
Like give them so much more to.
Yeah. And it definitely like drives like their like name out there, because like, I mean, I know it's like my husband, because he's a PhD student, like writes papers and all of that. And he always talks about, you know, like who you know, like definitely can like make or break like your career moving forward in this kind of field, just because like who you know is going to like ultimately either help you because they're going to like vouch for you, like Yoso was with putting all of these people on the reference list, or, you know, you're not going to be able to get your name out there and just kind of trying to get by. So she definitely was able to like do as much as she could in that moment.
Yeah, for she these gave different everyone people. Like a good point to go from.
Exactly.
Not necessarily starting, but a point to be recognized with. And
exactly.
That Yoso reading was very interesting to me, especially with all the different types of capital and cultural wealth that they were talking about. Like I hadn't thought about any of that.
Yeah, and all the different like critical like studies basically that she was talking about, like feminine crit, like Asian crit, like all of those, like talking Black about like crit,
yeah
like all of these different like sections of society basically can be like looked at in a critical lens. And I liked when she was talking about how much we always want to talk about, like in the US especially, how, oh, it's black and white, it's black and white, it's black and white. And it's so much more than just that. It's like, really, it should be white and people of color in general, but it's never looked at like that, just because of how things were in the past. But in reality, it's always like, it's like, well, no, because there's also, you know, there's black, but there's also people that are Asian. There's people that are Latino, Latina, like there's Asian, like, so like Native American.
It's not too, it's not a,
no.
I know we were talking about too, like education in general isn't, in the world isn't a one-way street, but it's also not a two-way street either. It's like a whole melting pot of everything. Yeah. Like
exactly.
People, beliefs, criticisms, everything.
Yeah, exactly. No, I definitely agree with that. And I feel like that's like a hard thing for like people to like maybe realize. I don't know.
I agree. Starting this new job in January, I thought I knew the school. I thought I knew the people. I thought I knew the teachers, but I don't. Mm-hmm. And I knew my team, and my team was very welcoming in kinder where I was student teaching, and everyone was willing to help each other do anything they could. Like it wasn't like a, I'll do this for you, but you owe me. Like it was, I'm going to do it for you to help you. And it didn't matter if it was like me doing something as the student teacher or like them doing something for me. Like they all saw each other as like co-workers and like co-teachers in a sense. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved up, that's not how my team sees it anymore. It's like, well, I can do this, but can you do this for me?
Yeah.
And I'm more than willing to like help you out too, but it's not
much
like
more of like, it's almost like the like transaction, like banking exactly. model of like education with the students.
Exactly. And they just don't get that. Like sometimes you just do things because
it's the right
you
thing.
You do things like you do things for the students. It's not, I'm not doing it for everything else. Like I'm doing it for those kids, which I think is, I don't know, a different way that they see, that we see this job.
Yeah. Cause is this your first like full like teaching position then?
Yeah, I graduated in December, so I've just been on for, 2 months now? A month and a half?
Yeah, so I'm sure that has definitely been a roller coaster.
Yeah, we're definitely all learning together. I had the opportunity to meet with a lot of parents this past Friday because it was kind of like our field day before spring break let out. And so a lot of the parents were invited and they were like, thanks for coming in. Like our kids like you. And I was like, oh, like, I just felt so like honored. I was like, well, thank you. Like, I'm so glad. And I was like, listen, I'm going to be honest. Like I'm learning just as much as they are, if not more. And I'm learning a lot from them because I don't know how everything works and I've never done it. And my team's not always the greatest. So we're all learning together.
Exactly. Yeah. And I feel like there's so much like expectations, like starting out in the teaching role of like being like perfect, I guess, and doing everything like the right way. And I think like this class like also kind of like brings that to light that like, you know, you don't have to like do everything like the correct way. Like you just have to like make sure that what you're doing and like how you're doing it is what's best for like the kids. So that always makes things difficult though, starting out. It can be scary.
Before taking this class, I always wanted like a black and white answer on something, or how do you solve this, like what are the steps I need to take, like, and that's just not realistic and it's just not going to happen. And it's definitely opened my eyes to be more okay. Like if we leave the day and like we didn't finish everything, like it's okay because it's not going to happen. Or if like a student asks me something and I don't know what the answer is, like before I'd be like, oh my gosh, I don't know. And like now I'm like, I don't know, like let's look it up together and like we solve the issue or whatever it is. Like everything doesn't have to be solved and answered within 10 seconds of having the question.
So I guess like in like respect to this, like were you already doing kind of like the like funds of knowledge like practice like with your kids, like being so like new into the role? Or like now that like I feel like it's kind of like, oh, like I like have a way of like describing something, like I'm going to implement it kind of a deal. Like I'm interested to like hear that, how that like kind of works.
I like to think I did some of it before just because it's part of like what all teachers do. You know, it's kind of like this big ESL test that much like people are getting required to take. It's stuff you already do for those kids and you just don't, you don't have a word for it necessarily. Now I have a word for it. And I definitely learned like to be more specific in my questions and like the things I do. But I think part of it was already there, but there was also like, I learned stuff from some of our classmates, like Jennifer and her sharing of like how she does it. And I know someone else, I think it was Hallie, was talking about family practices and values. And I tried to extend it to not just talking about like the kid themselves, but like their own community. Like, cause they don't just go to school and then go home with like their parents. Like they have friends, they have extended family, and like extending it into that. And like, we share the community because they're all, they all live in like the similar-ish area, but a lot of my kids have divorced parents. So like some of them live 40 minutes away, but they just use mom's address or dad's address. So like they have two different communities. So I've tried to talk about that with my kids more and making sure like their whole, the whole child is represented, not just a piece of them.
But
I know it's hard too, because you can't stray off track too much, but it's something that's very important.
Always trying to like make sure that like you're never like making any one person like feel excluded by like something that's like unintentional kind of a deal. So I think that's smart,
because you're trying to gain their trust. So
exactly,
the more they trust you, the more they'll share and the more they'll get from school, at least in my short experience.
Hey, you have more experience than I do, so
it's been inside of school, like observing it all yet, or not?
Not yet. No, that would be, I believe, in the fall. So we will, we'll see.
Did you gain anything that you're like, oh, I'm definitely doing this, or I'm definitely not doing this from this week and the readings and everything we shared?
Yeah, I think like the funds of knowledge, I just think like asking like the kids, like even just like, I think in the video they said something about like, I don't know, like fun Fridays, or they labeled it like something, like even just like on like Friday mornings, like spending like 5 to 10 minutes on like, you know, what's your favorite like toppings for a pizza, or like something like super random that like is going to get the like students like interested in the day, and also like get them thinking to where like they're more engaged from the get-go, is definitely something that I think is going to be beneficial. Just because I always liked when teachers did stuff like that in the past. Like I always thought it was helpful, even if I didn't like understand why we were doing it from like their point of view. I always thought it was more helpful to do that kind of thing. So
yeah, I definitely agree.
Think I'll like try to like do that in mine.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, that's why they did that, that's why we had to do this. I thought that was so weird. Now I get it, like you never know until you're on the other side.
Exactly. I feel like that's always the hard part, like as a student, like it's so easy to like judge like what and why the teachers are doing things, because like you don't understand like the ulterior like motives behind it. But then once you like are on the other side, you're like, oh
yeah,
that's why.
Totally agree. I totally agree. Even now, like in grad school, I'm like, you see it as a, with a more like analytical and like critical approach almost. Like I'm sitting there, I'm like, he's asking this because of this, or like, oh, I think we're doing this because of this, or like, oh, I don't get this. And then like later I'm like, oh, that's why we did this. Like it all makes sense eventually. But when you're
exactly
7 years old, you're like, why am I talking about what? Who cares?
Exactly. No, I totally agree on that.
Yeah. The Yoso reading, were there any capitals in particular that you hadn't thought of before? Because I know she listed out the six of them that were aspirational, linguistic, familial, social, navigational, and resistant.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I can't remember what class it was I took over this summer, but we kind of talked about a lot of them. I think it was possibly English as a second language. So like, we obviously talked about like the linguistical one a lot. And I feel like familial is pretty like, one that people normally talk about or like know about. I guess maybe like the aspirational one, I feel like is one right. That like isn't as like talked about maybe.
I agree. I thought the linguistic one, well, I agree they talk about it a lot, but I like the way that she put it in perspective that like being multilingual or bilingual is like helpful, like it's good.
Exactly.
So often now, like in people see like ELLs as like a deficit or like, exactly. Oh, it's harder because I have to do this, this, and this. But like in reality, like those are the people that are gonna, those kids are gonna grow up and make more money than us because they can speak two languages.
Exactly.
They're gonna have more, they're gonna get more opportunities because they could speak both languages or three or four, however.
Exactly.
Many.
Yeah, because like in the ESL class, like, yeah, like they talked about that a lot. And like, I mean, even when I've like applied for jobs in the past, like there's a lot of times where it's like Spanish preferred to be able to speak. And like for those ones, I'd always just be like, oh, like I'm just gonna like still throw in like an application, even though like I can't speak Spanish. But then you would see the other ones where it was like English and Spanish required.
Right.
So then for those ones, I was like, well, I can't speak that. So I think it's definitely something that needs to kind of like you said, be looked at as more of like a benefit for the child rather than like, oh, I have to do these extra steps like as the adult for the child. So.
Right. I would agree.
Awesome. Well, we'll be back after the break to have an open discussion about privilege and how it's affected our lives. And we'll see you soon.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Transformative Talk. I'm Emily and Jillian, we are your hosts. And as we mentioned, we're gonna start talking about privilege that we experience and our thoughts on it. Throughout the readings this week, both of us agreed that this was a big theme that we pulled out of all three of them and talking about the habitus and field in the Levinson reading, we saw that all of that pertained and the funds of knowledge all pertain to privileges that we see in our world. So how do you see privilege in your life, Emily?
I guess like in my life currently, I guess I'll go back to like when I was a child. Because I think a lot of times, especially like last semester when I started out, I didn't really, I don't know, you always like kind of were like, oh, like I have like these certain things in my life that like you go to like a friend's house and like they don't have similar things that you're used to in your home. But you don't really have a way to like describe what that is or like what it means necessarily. Till I feel like you're older and then you realize like, oh, that is called privilege and this is what happens. So yeah, so I grew up, my dad was in the military, so we moved quite often, usually like every like 4 or 5-ish years, just kind of depended. But yeah, so my mom, because of the fact that my dad made enough money through the military, she stayed at home and didn't work for the most part until like all of me and my like three brothers were all in school, because I'm the second and I have two younger brothers, one older. So she pretty much just like stayed at home, like, you know, did the whole like watching the kids, like
all that. She had a huge privilege of that.
Yeah.
Even though definitely very much hard work.
Yeah. So definitely like difficult, just that it was the fact that like, I remember in like elementary school, like when we lived in Wisconsin, I think I got like 2 or 3 like ear infections 1 year or something. And we just like go to the like nurse's office, be like, need to call my mom, need to be picked up. And it was just like within like 10, 20 minutes, like here comes my mom to bail me out of school. Like not a big deal. And like, even like once I got older in like middle school or high school, it was like the most like minor inconvenience. I was like, oh, like, I don't feel good. Like just going to go to the office, tell them I want to go home. And then like my mom would come pick me up and like, I would just make up the work. It was fine. So I feel like that was like a big privilege because like I had my mom that would just be able to like come pick us up on a whim. I never had the situation where I know friends of mine, they'd be like, yeah, I tried that. And like, my parents told me, go back to class.
Stick it out.
Yeah, like stick it out. Like once you get home, like you can just chill and like relax kind of a deal. So I think that was like a huge one. I know some people that had similar situations, like their mom stayed at home as well. They would get like help from like their mom on like homework and stuff, which like I never really did. Like my mom was like pretty like hands off, like in that regard, was more so just like make sure you get your work done.
Right.
So I think that like helped me be like a bit more independent. But yeah, like it wasn't until I got older that my mom then started like working. But even then she worked from home and it was for my grandparents' business. So if there was a day that like she didn't need to or like wanted to go do errands or this or that, she was able to just like
drop
that and like come pick us up or like do whatever. Yeah, it was pretty simple. And like one thing too, like my parents always let us like have a day or two. I can't remember like how many days they gave us. They always gave us like just days to like not go to school. They were like, oh, like you get like
the same thing.
Yeah. I forget how many like they allotted us. I can't remember if it was like one in like the fall and like one in the spring or like what. But yeah, most of the time I would just like use those days to just like chill at home. Like there was only one time I used it like to be responsible because I was like stressed about my like AP bio test that I had in high school. So I was like, I need to like use like my day. Like I need to stay home tomorrow because I need to pass this test. So like they let me stay home so I could just like study all day. So they're, you know, like they were just like, whatever, like go ahead, like, go do that.
My parents gave us 2 and 2. They're like, no questions.
Yeah. So like that was like obviously like a big privilege too, to just be like, oh, I'm gonna skip like the whole day of school so I can study for this important test, because I knew that like if I go to school and I come home, I mean, I have all this other homework and other things to focus on outside of just studying for the test. So that definitely like made life easier. And like I grew up doing like competitive cheer, which is not cheap whatsoever. And luckily, because I don't think like my parents were like, you know, this is gonna be expensive, like I don't know if we can afford this kind of a deal, but my grandma like ended up like sponsoring me basically. So like she paid for everything to like let me do that, to like let me do like the whole like sport thing. Because before I did that, I did like gymnastics, but I didn't really I did it a little bit like for like 4 years, but I was never like really committed to it, versus when I got into cheer, like that was what I really enjoyed. So they knew it was something I really liked, and I got to like travel and stuff like that, which was really fun. So like that's what like they wanted me to be able to do. But again, we had like another set of teams in the gym that were non-travel teams, so they only went to the local competitions. And it was a lot cheaper to be on those teams. And that's where I started my very first year. And they were like, okay, well, like do it for this year. And if you really like it, then we'll let you move to like the travel teams that like cost an arm and a leg to like be on those teams. And I was like, yes, like I want to do it. Like I want to like be on, like I want to just like go wherever. Because when I first started out, it was one competition that was in California. So, you know, you have to pay for airfare, hotels, right. All of that.
It adds up.
Exactly. And then when we moved out of there, then the next year I got moved up to like another team that did Dallas and California. So then it's like adding on. Mm-hmm. So with those experiences, it definitely, like, you know, looking back, it makes me realize like the privilege that I had growing up to be able to, you know, have parents that just kind of were like, you can, you know, do whatever you want when you need to do it, but also having like the outlet that not many kids are able to afford or have the opportunity to get invested in, like I did with like the sports that I did, which really helped. I was always like the goody two shoes kid. So like, I know my parents never had to worry about me like, oh, she's going to go like do like drugs or like get into like bad, like friend group, stuff like that. But I know for a lot of people, that was why they joined, because like they did have that kind of like friend groups that would get them in trouble, and them being so focused and having like multiple practices a week and stuff like that helped them kind of like, yeah, they didn't have time to like get in trouble. And they had like an outlet for like all of that. So I think like it definitely is beneficial for like kids to like have that kind of like outlet, whether it's sports or like just like a hobby or activity, stuff like that. But I think a lot of times like they don't have like the ability to access those things. And like I said, like growing up, I never was like, oh, like I'm so privileged because like I have these things that like I get to do. Whereas like, you know, I have friends that like when I moved to Texas, they were like, yeah, like I've never left the state of Texas. And like, it was just like mind like boggling to me to like realize. Mm-hmm. But once you get older, I think you start to like, if you do have privilege, you start to realize like, oh, like there's all these experiences and things that I've gotten to do in my life that other people my same age
right
have never even like had access to.
So at like what point did you like, because right now you're like, oh, like looking back, like I was able to do this, I could cheer, I could do, like I didn't have to worry, like if I was sick, like I knew she could come get me, like it wasn't a big deal, she didn't have to like interrupt her job and like then her get in trouble. So at what point did you realize like, oh, like I had a lot of stuff that not everyone else did?
I would say probably in college. Yeah. Like probably during like my undergrad, I would say, just cause like, I feel like when you're in like high school, even like, you're just like oblivious. Cause like, you're still a kid. Like you're just like, oh, whatever. Like I have these things, but yeah. Like, cause even in college, like I went to school on my dad's GI Bill because like, since he was in the military, he transferred that to me. So again, I had the privilege of like the fact that he was able to plan out for my education, that, you know, like I didn't have to worry about how am I going to pay for school.
Right.
Like I got to live off campus, even though my parents lived in San Antonio and I was going to UTSA. I got to live on my own. I got like a monthly allowance through the military, like all of these things. Like, so I think that was kind of when I was like, okay, well, like all of my other friends, for the most part, either can't move out of their parents' house because they're like, oh, just commute, you live in San Antonio.
Right.
Or we're having to be like, okay, well, like I moved out because I have a job. I also didn't have to have a job while I was in college. So like, that was the other thing. I was like, okay, well, like, all my other friends have jobs, but I was able to not, because I was getting paid each month by the military to literally go to school, which most people don't have that like luxury. And so all of those things kind of like built up. I was like, okay, well, I don't have to worry about after school, like, oh, okay, for the next like however many years of paying off loans, having to worry about that like as well. So I think that was kind of like, once I kind of realized like that aspect of it, then I kind of was like, would think back of like, okay, well, like what other things through my life did I have a similar situation, but I didn't really realize it at the time yet.
Right. I took this, let me backtrack. In high school, I went to a private high school. So that in itself is a lot of cash that was given just for education. And I had this class, and it was a religious course, and we were talking about privilege in it one day. And the teacher was also my advisor, so I had him, like, I was with him a lot. He told me, he was like, you get it, but you don't get it. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, one day you'll understand, like, why everything works the way it does, and like why you have things, and but you also are going to understand the flip side, like why other people don't. And you get part of it now, but you don't get it all. And like, he was very vague in the statement.
Yeah.
I don't think I do. Like, I had no idea what he was talking about. And fast forward to sophomore year of college, that was probably like junior, senior year. I took an interdisciplinary course on diversity, equity, and social sciences. And we had a class 1 week that was completely over like white privilege and privilege in general. And we had this reading by, I want to say by someone, Bell, I'm not 100% certain, but it had this list of like 40 something privileges that white people have that no one else does. And one of them was like the most simple thing ever, but like when you go to the store and buy a Band-Aid, the Band-Aid is called skin color, but it's only my skin color.
Yeah.
It's no one else's skin color. And I was like,
I saw that recently. Gosh. Yeah.
Like what, like, it's just the most simple, like I would have never thought twice about it because it fits me, but like a darker skin complexion, like that's not their skin color. Mm-hmm. Like, how can you call it skin color? And there was a lot more other things, like you don't have to worry about like living in certain neighborhoods, like you aren't scared walking down the street at night all the time, like if you're a woman that can change. But it was just like all being white thing, and like this whole list, I was like, they're right, like I don't, like I do have this, I don't have this.
Yeah.
And I remember that professor was talking about it, and I was like, I get it now, like I understand like why that high school teacher was like, you're gonna understand one day like why you are the way you are and why other people are the way they are. And I was like, I understand. And like, I think I understood like not to necessarily rub that privilege in other people's faces. Yeah. And I think that's where my high school teacher was coming from. He was like, you get that you have it, but you just don't fully understand like what the weight that it carries. And after that course, I was like, oh my gosh, like I finally understand it. And so now, fast forward to like this course that we're taking, it makes a lot more sense too. Like we were talking about all the systems of oppression and like critical race theory and like being able to implement all the things I learned in undergrad to this class. I'm like, I feel like I'm understanding more and more. So like now I work in Bernie ISD, which is predominantly white kids and white teachers. And in being in grad school, I get something that like not all the other teachers do. And like, we're having all these like critical discussions and analysis and like all these things and all these readings. And the other day, this little boy had nail polish on his fingers, and this teacher was just like flipping out over his nail polish. And I was like, how? I looked at her and I was like, and she's my mentor, and she is probably mid 50s. So like very established, like the type that's counting down her days. Which I also, that's a whole nother thing, but she was like going bananas over this. I was like, how is that impacting what you're doing in your room? Is that changing the teaching? Is that changing the classroom environment? And it was, like, it was changing the classroom environment because that's all she could focus on. And
yeah.
Like, how does what he wants to do and how he wants to express himself impact you?
Yeah.
Like, and then I started talking about, I was like, well, some people have tattoos. Like, does that change your thinking of them? Like, does that matter? Who, like, that doesn't change who they are as a person.
Yeah.
Like, it's just the way they want to express themselves. And like, these people just, they're just so narrow-minded and so stuck in like how they grew up. And like, I think I'm privileged in the fact that like I was able to learn about it and recognize it and like now use it to like help instead of hurt. And not to say they're hurting, like they really have big hearts and they're wonderful like teachers and people, but like just like small instances like that.
And yeah,
like, you don't get like all these little things you're saying, like how important and how much of like a weight they carry for like someone else.
Yeah, because you never know, like, I mean, like everyone always talks about like something that somebody told them, like a bully or like something like that, like as a kid, mm-hmm. and like still thinking about it, like, you know, mm-hmm. years later, because like those like actions and like words like have a lasting impression.
Right. And I'm sure I've said those things too. And like, I'm definitely very much still learning and trying to be very much aware. And I think this class has definitely made me more aware and more like
definitely
cognizant of like everything I do, like has an impact. And like, I'm still trying to figure out how to make the best impact. But I mean, everyone messes up and, you know, no one's perfect, clearly, but
yeah,
it's just the fact of like, I was trying to have a conversation. I'm like, well, we get things that like other people don't. And like, we have a dual language class in first grade, and all of their instruction is in Spanish besides science and social studies. And we get about 20, 30 minutes of that. So they're like fully immersed in Spanish. And we were talking to the teacher, and one of the other ones was like, well, can't you just do that in English just so they get it? And she was like, no, like, that's not how it works. And she was like, well, I don't get it. Why not? And I looked at her and I was like, because that's not the curriculum they're in. Like, that's not their plans. That's not how it, like, they have to meet like certain, like to a T minutes of Spanish and English instruction. And she was like, oh, well, it'll just be easier if you did this. But like, then there's also there's a good amount of like native English speakers in there, but there's more native Spanish speakers, and that class is like where they need to be, because they would like sink in
yeah.
all English speaking class. And like, we're lucky and again privileged to have dual language in our school.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just like a pull out 20 minutes for like English second language.
Exactly.
But like, those kids don't have privileges that everyone else does, but they have a lot more than like other schools, because at least they have a class that fits their needs.
Exactly.
It's just like the little things that like I start to like
get yeah. to
me. Before, I was too scared to say anything, because I was like, I don't want to stir any pots, and like me being new and me being like brand new to teaching in general, I'm very much like trying to just
yeah
steer clear. But I'm like, I can't, so we'll see what team I'm on next year, but hopefully it's something changes a little bit.
There you go.
It's difficult to work with.
I'm sure it is.
But yeah. I know that we took that two privileged quizzes, the BuzzFeed one, and or both of them were BuzzFeeds, but the first one I didn't realize was not the one that we initially had on our class calendar. And I didn't see the other one when I was researching them. The only one I saw was very much, I know Dr. Haddad was talking about like after the ice storm, it was like, do you have to worry about power? Do you have to worry yeah. about like food, like stuff like that? But I thought it was interesting, because when he brought up the other one, a lot of our class carried similar like percentages of privilege. And I know that Kelly was talking about how her privileges, she had like a lot of them. And she said that all the disadvantages that she checked or like left unchecked mm-hmm. didn't threaten her life or didn't yeah. interrupt like her daily like upbringing. And I resonated a lot with that, because I was like, mine too. Like, everything I checked like wasn't that.
Yeah, it wasn't that like detrimental.
The scariest thing I had was like walking alone at night. Like
yeah.
as a woman, it's more frightening than if you're male.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Kelsey said on the other end, she said she found out she's not as privileged as society tends to make her feel as a white woman. She started to feel anxious and thinking of her daily worries and struggles or of her past. And she said, I'm privileged just working as a working member of the middle class in the world. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting too, to see the flip side of it. But
yeah, that's how mine was too. Like, pretty much they're pretty even on both of them. And yeah, like the ones that I wasn't checking were more like family related or just like random things, like you said, like the walking at night, like nothing that I'm like, oh, like this has like a huge like negative effect
right.
if I was like in that situation.
Right. And I know Jennifer said that She has shared her results with us, and it said, you carry some privilege in life in less visible and invisible ways, but there's nothing wrong with that. Many of the things on the list are comfort that everyone should be afforded, but there are also many forms of privilege on the list that you don't carry. And her response to it was that she feels the results were accurate. However, if she would have taken this quiz when she was in high school and undergrad, she thinks her results would have been entirely different. So I feel like that's very interesting too, because you were talking about in high school, you're just as a high school in general, you're oblivious to so many things.
Exactly.
Like, people are becoming
more aware. Life is great.
But yeah, you're just like, I'm having fun. I'm hanging out with my friends. Like, and I know that's not the reality for a lot of people too. So like, even me being able to say that's how my high school career was is privilege in itself.
Exactly. No, I totally agree with that.
The second one was a lot more eye-opening because it was a lot more personal, and like the questions were a lot deeper of like, you see yourself being represented, and like you've never been called out because of your race, religious beliefs,
gender, like that. Stuff like that.
The way your hair is, I think, was on there too.
I think so, yeah.
I would have never, it's like even more of like a privilege that I have to never even have thought about those things.
Yeah, exactly.
So I definitely like the discussion we had after that too with our class. I think everyone's a little bit more like aware and like able to share too, like, yeah, this is stuff I go through, and everyone's really listening to each other. So I thought it was a good moment.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah, I liked that part of it. All right, so that's all for this episode. Make sure to check yourself and think about your privilege. Thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to support what we do, then share, subscribe, and leave a review whenever you discovered our show. That is all for now, but we will see you in the next episode of Transformative Talk. Bye.